graduation speech? Did you have a graduation speaker?
Oh, I was the valedictorian.
You were?
Yeah. I mean, I went for 18, I was, I don't think, or something like that. And I don't know, Ann McCorkle was the salutatorian, maybe? We had outside speakers I don't know who spoke at my graduation. I haven't the foggiest notion. But I remember, you know, sometimes we'd have Dr. Gaines, who was the president of Washington Lee, who was an outstanding speaker. We'd have Dr. Flick, who lived in the Fairfield neighborhood, who was taught at Washington Lee, who was very interested in education. I think he taught education at Washington Lee. He would speak, and you'd have, outstanding speakers from Stanton or this, that, and the other, for the speakers all the time, the graduation speakers.
Do you remember the dedication of the new school building? Did you go to that?
Oh, yes. I was, we had to listen to it being built, you know, all the time. I remember in the stucco building, I had freshman English upstairs in the room that was, it was a square building, and there were maybe two classrooms downstairs, one on each side of the hall, and then they built all a cafeteria at the back. We didn't have lunches for a long time. Maybe I was in the seventh grade or so when we had something like a lunchroom, and you could get soup or something of that sort, but there's nothing like cafeterias here, and everybody mostly brought their lunch even then. But upstairs over these two downstairs classrooms were the home economics department, and then on the left was freshman English. And it was at the front, and all, you know, I remember Miss Trimmer and Edgar Allan Poe, a few of these people, and this noise outside with the building of the new building all the time. So I guess I must have been a sophomore or junior. I guess I was a sophomore when we first started in the new building, I suppose. Because I played basketball in that building that's the first time we'd had an inside gymnasium. And I must have been, I don't know whether it took 2 years, whether I was a junior in high school when we first got into that building. I can't remember. I think I had, at the front of that building, you went to elementary school in that building,
mm-hmm.
toward the Asbury Methodist Church, upstairs on the second floor, I remember having trigonometry, some kind of upper math in that building. I also had English and Latin, I think, in that same room. And so I probably was a junior when we moved into that building, maybe.
Was there a big ceremony, a ribbon cutting?
Oh, yes, there was a big ceremony. I remember we had some outstanding speaker, and I can't remember who it was. But I don't remember much about it. I must not have been much impressed. Does anybody, have you ever recorded anybody's vivid remember of the
mm-mm.
memory of it? I don't think I asked.
I don't think anyone asked Mrs. Whipple that. I wonder if she would remember.
Oh, I expect she did.
She might. Because
she taught. I remember during the Depression, we had all kinds of programs that you could make a little money. And we had a program called NYA, National Youth Association. And I tutored some kids in her fourth grade or something like that, and made a little money with this NYA program. And that was in that building. I must have been a senior when I did that. And I think she was teaching fourth grade, and I've forgotten what we talked about, but maybe it was English or history or some of those things. I don't remember what it was, but I don't remember who the kids were. But I remember the money I made, $12 or something like that.
Did local people mostly build the new school building, or were they?
I have no idea. I don't know at all. Were they may have been outside contractors. I doubt seriously if they were local. I don't know.
Was the bank always there in Brownsburg, in your memory?
Yeah, the bank came during Dr. McLaughlin's time at New Providence, and he was gone by the time we moved to Brownsburg. He was instrumental in establishing a bank in the Bank of Rockbridge, and it was always in that same place, and the telephone office was above the bank, in my memory. And I suppose that's the only place the bank ever was. Excuse me, the telephone office had been some other places I've read somewhere. I don't remember the telephone office being anywhere else. But, yeah, the bank was there. And Mr. Hugh Wade was the first banker I remember. And he had built, I suppose, the middle house of those three houses that just as you come out on Sterrett Road.
He was Margaret and Jen's and Kate's and...
Uncle. Their uncle, mm-hmm. They lived out at Castle Carberry, which is near their farm. Their father's name was Hamilton Wade. And they grew up out there. But...
Well, was he that... Did he have the mill down where Bill Dunlap lives?
No. Not
that was another Mr. Wade.
Yeah.
Right.
Mr. Walter Wade had the Kennedy Mill, and his brother, what was his name? Oh, I've forgotten his name, but he lived in the house that Mayor Patterson lives in. Those two Wade brothers must have inherited a farm right there and divided it. And Mr. Walter Wade lived in the mill house, and he built that other big house or something, and I forgot what his name was. But his son Harold was the miller where the Dunlaps, that was the, it was called the McClung Mill, and somebody else had that mill when I was in my first memory.
But you always went to Wade's Mill?
We always went to Wade's Mill. We never went down there. Ann Buchanan McCorkle was a friend of mine. I used to visit at their house. And there was somebody else, the miller, this mill was the next door neighbor of the Buchanans. And there was another family who ran that, and the Wades came there sometime in my, maybe high school years even. I guess he was farming at the I wish I could think of the name of his father, but I can't.
But were they related to Mr. Hugh Wade?
They never talked about being related. They must have been somewhere back in the years, but...
And then Mr. Bud Wade and Mr. Kite Wade were another whole...
That's another whole Rockbridge Baz group, and they, you know, they didn't act like they were kin at all. They were always separate families. But Mr. Hugh Wade had a wife, whom I very vaguely remember, and what I've forgotten what her name was, but he was a widower most of the time that I remember. And then I don't remember Miss Jen Heffelfinger's and Eleanor Marchant's. I don't remember their father at all. He had died before we came, I think, to Brownsburg. But their mother lived with them, and they had a brother who died in the had pneumonia and died. He worked in the bank with Mr. Hugh, like Mr. Hugh Wade, his uncle, I suppose. His name was John, and he was a young man. He couldn't have been more than 30 or so, and had pneumonia and died. And he was the last person I remember died of pneumonia. People. After, you know, after antibiotics and sulfur and those things, people didn't die of pneumonia. But he did, and that was a blow to them all, and that left just girls and women in that family. And then they began to marry. Wade came in into Brownsburg to keep house for Mr. Hugh Wade. I think she was the first one to move into Brownsburg. And that was when her mother was still living. And then when their mother died, I think Kate and Jan both came. And Margaret was away mostly, Margaret Wade, teaching at Montreat College. And Eleanor was away most of the time because she taught in various places. And they would, then when they came back in the summer, they'd come there to the house in Brownsburg. And they did not open the house at Castle Carver until so Jen was married, I suppose. I don't think anybody lived there for a long time.
Then did she live there for a while?
Yes, they lived there before they bought Level Loop. Mm-hmm. I don't know how long they lived there. Their cousin, Miss Sally Reed McClung, and Mr. Morton McClung owned Level Loop. And they were the first people I ever knew to move to a retirement home. They went to Westover, I think it was called, in Richmond. And they wanted to sell the farm, and so Bill Heffelfinger didn't own Castle Carberry, where the Wade girls all owned it together, the daughters, all these women. And he didn't much like that. He wanted something of his own to do what he wanted to with. So he did that, a beautiful, the first restoration we ever saw, really, in the Brownsburg area at Level Loop. And they moved there. I guess Grace was born when they were still living at, I know Steve was with them at Castle Carberry because I remember picking him up to take him to Bible school sometime. When I would teach Bible school in the summer when either I was in college or teaching school. And but I've forgotten whether Grace was born when they were living in Castle Carberry or not. I remember they came to a Christmas dinner we had during the Christmas season. It wasn't Christmas dinner, when Jenny was very pregnant with Grace. And I remember her sitting on the front porch trying to put on her overshoes, her galoshes. I had to walk through the snow. She could have had trouble leaning over trying to put on her overshoes. But I don't know where that. I think they maybe were still living at Castle Carberry, but I'm not sure.
And somebody, am I making this up, that he was a big football player?
His father
oh,
was
okay.
A big football player. He was outstanding. He went to Yale. And an outstanding football player, Pudge Heffelfinger, and everybody knew him during the era in which he went to college. He was outstanding. And but they were.
How did Mr. Heffelfinger ever wind up in Brownsburg?
He came to the special services school at Washington Lee, and that's how she met him in the Army. And I think that Fanny Bosworth, who was Tom Bosworth's half-sister, Mr. Bosworth was married twice, and he had a son named Jim? I've forgotten. The older, and then a daughter named Fanny. And Fanny was very popular everywhere, and she always knew VMI boys and everybody who came to Washington Lee and everything. And I think maybe she introduced him to Jen sometime, and I've forgotten how all that went. But I remember we didn't have telephones at college in the rooms or anything of that sort. If you ever talked to your parents, you had to go somewhere else, and I've forgotten where the phone was. It might have been in the matron's office or somewhere in the main building. But there was this great conversation between me and Mother on this telephone about whether I should come for the wedding. There was Jen and Bill were getting married, and probably at Castle Carberry. I don't think it was in the church. He'd been married before. And I think I didn't go. I remember, of course it was during the war, and Mother didn't seem to think it was that important. I don't think she knew it was going to happen, really. I think they must have been invited or been expected to invite him. I guess they went. I don't remember anything about it at all, how all that happened.
Were the Heffelfingers considerably younger than they were? Than grandmother and granddad?
Yes. I don't know how much younger they... Mullen was Margaret's age, I expect. So,
And what was the order?
Of the Wades?
Mm-hmm.
I think Mary was oldest and Margaret was the next, and Jan was the next, and John was the next, and Elmer was the next.
Kate.
Oh, Kate was in there, yes. She was probably older than Jan. Maybe it was...
So they weren't that far apart in age then?
No. Mary, Margaret, Kate, and Jan, probably. And no, they weren't. But they're not like as old as the Pattersons and the Buchanans and the mother and daddy. But I guess Bill was not a young soldier, really young soldier, when he came to School of Special Services at W&L. Because he'd been married and had a child. That child was living with his parents in Texas, I guess. I always get mixed
up. And that was Steve?
No, Steve, yeah. Mm-hmm. And his mother had died. I think that, I'm not sure whether, I know the mother died, but I don't know whether it was before they were divorced or whether they were divorced or what. I don't know much about her. But they were always, these people were mother's very best friends, the Wade ladies. Saw her through the years that daddy was away, I'm sure. It supported her a great deal. All of that. Just being good friends. Well, all this was evolved from that question you asked me about the special people, I remember. And those were, I sang in the choir at New Providence when I was in high school. And I guess this was when Dad was away. Mother would drive me down to the Wades. Or maybe Jan came for me sometimes because she picked up a Snyder. What was her name? Stella Snyder, I believe her name was. Who lived... is that house still there? I don't... You know the house where Boy and Louise built?
Mm-hmm.
There's a house. Was that a house? Is there a house between that and the black people?
I think it must be gone.
I think it.
That's where Miss Bessie and Mr.
Oh yeah. Buford Swisher.
Yes.
Is that house gone?
I think it's gone.
Anyway, that's where the Snyders live, and we would take her to. Jen would take us both to choir practice at New Providence.
Was she the choir director?
Mm-hmm.
So she was choir director up through when I was in high school.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And she played the organ, I guess, most of the years.
Was Dad well,
Elsie Wade played the organ when I first, this is Frances and Winston's oldest sister. And then Elsie got married and moved away and Ma and Sue came at that time.
Do you remember when the organ was a pump with it?
I vaguely remember. I guess there wasn't electricity in the church, maybe. When I was a very small child, there was a black man named John Franklin who pumped the organ. It had a... As you look at the organ to the left, just as you come in the door from the other building, there was a piece of wood. Does it still stick out there?
I know I've seen it. I don't know if it's there now or if I remember it.
Uh-huh. And John used to pump that organ. You sit back there in the chair, pump the organ. But I must have been 5 years old or something like that when that happened. Because I imagine New Providence got electricity pretty soon.
Did you start to say something about Mary Monroe Keene?
No, maybe I thought about it. Maybe I did. We had a period when she came out there and directed the choir. Maybe a year. I don't know. She came every every Wednesday night or whenever we practiced. That was very thrilling. She was never there on Sunday, but she would do the choir rehearsal with us and did all kinds of things. We had a lot of people in that choir always.
When did Daddy start singing in it?
Oh, I don't remember. Probably when I was in college. I just don't remember how.
But you had a lot of men too? Did you have some?
Oh, we had Mr. Gene Buchanan and Mr. Bud McCutcheon were the bass. The room that's now the Historical Society was the choir room, the historical room. And we'd all get back in there, get dressed, put on our robes. And some of the Wades, I guess, Hamilton, yeah, this is one of the Winston's older brother. Those people are always musical. And, I don't know who else. Well, Mr. Austin Lucas from down at Newport. And there were some other men that I don't remember. I think there was a McRae from the Newport area and on. And, I remember the men more than I do the women. I can't remember. The women.
Meredith Rapinick came out.
I remember.
I wonder why.
And they asked her, pay her something, I suppose, and she just came. I don't know whether I remember she was there in the winter time, but I can't remember whether she came all summer. I remember she, you know, the Elmer Huffmans owned the filling station at one point, and they lived in Lexington. They were backdoor neighbors to Aunt Alice and Uncle John. I don't think they ever lived in Brownsburg. They may have lived in that house that attached to the filling station once, but I think she went. They all went to the Lexington Presbyterian Church. I guess they did. And she knew them, and I remember she'd come out there, she was allowing to herself, and she'd eat raw oysters in Mr. Huffman's store, you know, for supper or something like that. She'd come early and have supper, a tin can in the back of the store or somewhere, something like that, and then come on right there. But she'd drive out there and then drive back, I guess, after the choir practice. But
you all must have been pretty big time choir if you had her coming out.
I think she liked Jen. She knew Jen, you know, liked her. Everybody liked Jen. And Jen had such a pretty voice. And she'd always have her do the solo things and stuff like that. And I wish I could remember who the other women were, because I just don't. There were a whole bunch of us young people, like I can't remember any of the other Cannon girls sang in the choir that must have. There was one named Elizabeth who was just a little bit older than Anne. One named Eugenia. And I don't know whether they sang in the choir or not, but their dad. And Anne and I did. And by the time we got in there, there was Jimmy Wade and George Slusser. And I don't know who else. Remember one time we sang a quartet, Ellen and Jimmy and George and I. And what in the world was it? Oh, it was something awful. What is that thing about your sins whiter than snow? But we were bad. Music was pretty bad, I think. But we'd had, New Providence had these fantastic Christmas programs and fantastic weddings. For weddings, the young people, Miss Carrie Lucas and Elsie Wade, were the advisors for the young people for years and years and years. Miss Carrie lived in the Newport. And for weddings, they would cut cedar trees and bank that church with cedar trees, big, beautiful cedar trees all around. And you'd have this beautiful garden put away. I remember one of the Lock White's sons, I guess, was married there when the Whites were the pastor. And they couldn't get over how everybody fell in and, you know, really decorated the church. It may have been at Christmas time or something, it seems to me. And then, the first wedding I ever went to was there was a pastor before Dr. McLaughlin named Wilson. What was his first name? Dr. Wilson. Anyway, he had a whole bunch of children, and there was one named Ellen, who was, all these pastors' families were always really close friends of the Wade girls because they lived next door. All the McLaughlins were great friends of the Wade girls. And then all the Wilsons had been too, and this one named Ellen must have been about Margaret's age. And she was married. I remember Dr. Wilson had left there, but she, and we were even up to Mr. Hanna by now, I suppose. And Dr. McLaughlin had even gone, but she must have been very young when the Wilsons left New Providence. But I knew her really well because she would come back. She met a man named Chambliss and lived in Southside, Virginia. He was a school superintendent in one of those counties in Southside. Anyway, we sat in the balcony, and I couldn't have been more than 5 years old or 6 years old. As you look at the front of the church, it was on the left balcony, right. We were way up at the corner. We looked right straight down the bride and groom and all that stuff. It was so exciting. And I've forgotten what the church looked like, but I remember Ellen had an older brother named Goodrich Wilson, who was also in the wedding, and he was a minister. And Dr. Wilson was quite aged by this time, and he forgot the ceremony during the ceremony, and Goodrich stepped in, and I remember this dear old man going around sitting on the steps to the pulpit. It seemed so sad to me, but everything just went right straight on because they sort of had expected this. They were quite prepared for it and so forth. But anyway, this is the first wedding I remember in New Providence. But I don't know, I must have been a part of sometimes of this decorating, I'm sure I was, of this decorating churches for the four weddings. But I don't remember. But also, it was equally, almost an equal ceremony for these Christmas programs that we had. And they were, it would be fantastic things. Of course, we now call them bathrobe nightmares. Nobody has these kinds of days anymore.
You're talking about having to hold your arms up.
Oh, yeah.
For hours and hours.
As an angel, and I hold my arms up for ages. We also at New Providence had very often, we had a wonderful junior choir. There were whole gobs of us my age, and we would fill up the corner, the Amen corner, in our little white robes, and you all had a junior choir when you were
that age. We did, but I don't think it was that big. Who directed yours?
We would have, I don't know who was can't remember the regular director, but I don't even know who played the piano for us. Was it? But we had, I guess they were assemblies, they came from the School of Christian Education. These women who would come in the summertime as interns, I suppose. And they would be, we had one named Crane one time, and then one named French or something like that. Two or three of these women who came in the summertime, and they would direct this junior choir. And we had quite a good, I remember we did that joy, joy, joy thing. And three or four of us sang from the balcony, did the echo from the balcony. That was really pretty.
Oh my goodness.
But that was with one of those full-time summer people. And I suppose she directed the Bible school too, you know, did, I'm sure that was part of her job.
How about the chrysanthemum shows? Were you involved in that? Oh yes.
My goodness. But mostly as a teenager, you know, the school closed on that day.
It did?
It did. We didn't have a school at Brownsburg, and everybody worked at the chrysanthemum show. And we had, they'd serve meals from maybe 11 o'clock in the morning until 2 o'clock in the afternoon or something. And then there was a skip, and then there was the dinner hour. And finally I got old enough to help, and I helped in the, you went upstairs to what is now the session room, where they served dessert. Then served dessert downstairs. You could have cake and ice cream and various things. And I worked there. I must have been in high school. I think the chrysanthemum show was not in existence when I was in college. And it must have ended with the war, maybe, you know, somewhere along in there.
Well, did you grow chrysanthemum?
No, we didn't.
Who showed chrysanthemum? Was it a judged show?
No.
Oh, it was just sort of an exhibit?
It wasn't a judged show like we know flower shows today. But they would have those on the third floor. What do you use those two large rooms for? Have they been divided?
Sunday school rooms.
They are big, Sunday school rooms?
They're still big Sunday school rooms mm-hmm. with little rooms
on. Little rooms on high, the side. Well, sometimes they would do like a Japanese garden or something. I remember a little bridge over water or something once.
But who would do that?
And I don't know who would do that. I know some of the people who grew chrysanthemums were, it seemed to me there were there was a family named Zimmerman. And I don't know whether they came to our church. I never remember them in our church, but they were in the Newport, between Newport and Middlebrook or somewhere like that. Anyway, it seems to me they were some of the exhibitors. I grew some chrysanthemums one year because I remember learning through all that disc budding, and I had a big bucket with manure water in it, and I watered them, and I don't remember exhibiting them, but they were wonderful. I learned a lot about chrysanthemums. It was fun. But there were people in Pisgah, seems to me, and all the growers seemed to me to be sort of in the Pisgah Newport area, but I'm not sure about that. I don't know whether Miss Whipple did or Miss Fay. I always thought some of those great gardeners would have, but I don't really remember. And they sold them, I think. You know, they sold these plants at the show, and but the room would be all bagged with these beautiful, beautiful chrysanthemums, and they were all the big football kind.
Uh-huh.
We didn't seem to grow the daisy type much, and the hardy kinds of chrysanthemums in those days. These were all potted things.
Oh my goodness! Oh, I didn't realize that.
And that's why all this disbudding, you know, all the time for, you know, one or two big blossoms. I wish I could think of who the other growers were. But it was a great occasion, and I guess it was just one day. I can't remember that it was two, but I remember when I always closed the school. And then some people would be, I remember people would gather bittersweet and be outside, like, where we used to drive up to the front and park all the time. And on that fence out toward the cemetery, there'd be some people selling various things. And people came from Stanton. That's a good location because it draws from both Lexington and Stanton, and you know, a lot of people between. And it was always a great event. They would make the ice cream. There's a room under the choir. They had big freezers then. What was I going to say?
You were going to talk about when you moved back to
Brownsburg. Oh, that's right, yeah. In 1983, we began to realize that we were sort of taking up the main house of the farm. And so one time I asked Mac if they really did want the house, if he'd be willing for me to have the house. And he and Anna talked about it, and they said that, yes, we could do that. And we decided I really wanted the house, and I was scared he was going to. He had said, we'll put some older couple in the house sometime, and I didn't know what might happen. And I didn't know whether he ever really understood the importance of that house in the area. And that made me fearful. But we sort of really needed to get away from the farm at Timber Ridge, and I really did want the house. And they agreed, and when Mother Daddy died, he got the farm, and I got some money. And so I had some money to work on the house, to put into the house, too. And we moved over there. Well, we began the work on it in December of 1983. And we had Mr. Ravenhorst come and look at the structure. Mr. Ravenhorst's his greatest forte was he was a really good engineer. He was a local architect in Lexington. And he looked under the house and around it and all sorts of things and decided, you know, what needed to be done structurally and what could be done without things falling to pieces or, you know, tearing up anything. And we all agreed that one of the major things that needed to be done was insulation, because Mac had said in the last years that Mother had lived there, I know he said to me one day, please come and get Mother because the heating is about to break us up. We're heating the outer doors. So we knew that, you know, lots of insulation needed to be done. And I knew that the wiring was 1939 age. We knew that needed to be done. And we hired Clinton Urban, who came out there and looked at the house. And the house was not in bad structural condition at all. It needed a lot of just refurbishing. And Clinton realized that this was, I remember he's coming down the steps from upstairs and looking at that woodwork. It's the floor of the upstairs landing, that interesting woodwork as you come down the steps, and he said, this is so important, and you've got a treasure here, and things of this sort. And he was so interested. And then his main carpenter, a man named, oh, I can't think of it all of a sudden, I'll think of it in a minute, Jim something, he lived right near House Mountain, and he was I'll call him the real woodsman, and he knew wood. And we took all the plastering off the living room and what was Mother's and Daddy's bedroom, and insulated it. I looked at a lot of people's houses in the Brownsburg area and other areas to see how they had insulated. And some people had not taken the woodwork off and had sort of set the insulation and the new wall out on the woodwork, and I knew I did not want that. So they took off all the woodwork, the mantel, and all the woodwork in both those rooms, and they never broke a piece of it. They put it all back. You know, they numbered it all and put it all back like it was and got those rooms insulated. And of course what happened is now that you can see in the windowsills that everything is an inch and a half smaller in the room, I suppose, because they added a little bit around the windows. But all the woodwork sits like it should, and none of the wall comes out on the woodwork. And that's what I was so particular about, because I think the woodwork in that house is interesting and an important part of the house. We always figured that our great-grandfather, Samuel Wilson, had some money in the 1830s, and in that period when he built the two big rooms of the room, when he added the brick addition. And he was watching people build their Georgian houses with big columns and things of that sort outside. And what he had was a little primitive house, and he did the important things inside, the mantles particularly. The mantle in the living room, the mantle in what is now the dining room. And maybe we always thought that maybe the mantle that was in that's in the library had been at one time been in what is now the dining room. And they changed him around because what is now the library was the back of the house, and he moved that mantle to a lesser room and made his 1830s mantle in the dining room. But that may or may not be true. That's a supposition, because the mantle in what is now your library looks older than the mantle in the dining room. But they worked in some of the coldest weather we'd ever had, I think, from that Christmas on until the next summer. And we moved there in the summer of 84. And we'd redone the floors. Marianne Foster helped me with a good deal of it, and then I used Mary Gale gotten her last name, in Lexington with some of the drapes and things of that sort. The only difficulty we had that really scared us was when we redid the floors. And we came upon all this beautiful flooring in the bedroom that had been covered with black paint. And we didn't know that we had so many woods and different things. And Mr. Mann, who's the main carpenter, his name I can't think of, Williams, Mr. Williams, knew that some of that flooring, the main part of that flooring, is chestnut. And it was before chestnut was worm-eaten, it was real chestnut. And then the rest of that flooring was leftover heart pine, and obviously two rooms. And we knew it had been two rooms, but when we replastered and redid the walls, you got rid of the division in the ceiling, but we could tell the division in the floor had indicated there were two rooms. And then I talked to Jim Alexander, who's remembered, and he and I put together the memory of his grandmother, Ada Wilson Fultz, who had said and had told Mother, and I remember this, that had been two rooms, what is now the library, and the room next to the hallway had been a pantry, and the lady of the house would go across the back porch, which is now the front porch, and or the servants would come from the old kitchen across the back porch, and she would hand out the supplies of the day from behind the locked door into the hallway from that pantry. And the front part of that room was probably the bedroom of the lady of the house, because she nearly always had a downstairs bedroom, and particularly Sally Wilson, after her mother and father had died. Well, maybe that was her father's bedroom, and where she cared for him, Samuel Wilson, her father. But we also had never seen the floors upstairs in the what I used for a guest room, the room over the dining room. The ones in the hallway had been refinished, but we had this man named, what was his name, to come look at the floors about how to refinish them. They'd all been sanded, and you could see their natural woods, and all the ones in the upstairs hallway are poplar, and poplar is not very pretty, sort of has a greenish tint, it's a light wood. And I said to the man, I would like the floors to show their distinctive wood, but to look alike. And Mary Ann Foster was there with me, and she said, we've chosen a stain that we think will do that. And he would not pay any attention to us. So, oh, Ms. Lipscomb, you will be really happy with what we do. Well, whatever I can do with this, I will, and I'll get it just like you want.
but this is the stain we want, we would say. And this just went off his back like water up against that. He paid no attention to us at all. And all we could do was really pray that this would come out like we wanted it. And it did. And every floor showed its original look. But all the floors were sort of a light walnut color. And that's what I had wanted. I certainly didn't want them to be a light color. But, and downstairs, in the hallway, Mr. Williams told us was something called black oak. And the two major rooms are, or the one major room is beautiful heart pine, and the ones upstairs are heart pine in the old section. And I think that in the section that my father did over in the 30s, probably they put a new floor over top of the probably is their original floor. And if anybody ever wanted to tear out those walls and you dig up those two rooms, because in the closets upstairs, those rooms, there are the original floors.
Hmm.
In the one that the bedroom I used, you could see a lot of that original floor. And in that little closet, that little linen closet in that little hallway, you could, I think that's true in there too. And when they did that work, people were not sanding floors and doing all this kind of thing, so they just put that new flooring over top. But we moved in the summer of around the 4th of July of 84. And we really, and Eric was not, his hands had gotten so bad that he couldn't carry buckets to help with the calf feeding, things of that sort. But, so it was good that he didn't have to think about that. And it was good for him to be away from Eric and Joe, who were running the farm, and not be there all the time. But he always, all summer long, he went back and over, he mowed Joe's grass and Eric's grass. And Eric and Marilyn lived in the Dutch Colonial House right after we moved. They moved from their house that they eventually they sold up to the Dutch Colonial, and they lived there for maybe 2 years, I've forgotten how long, and Joe and Julie were living in the greenhouse across the road. And when Tom Biggs came to see us, he was a pastor at New Providence, and asked us about joining the church, and we decided we really did want to continue to go to Timber Ridge. But that made us a little strange in that community, because we didn't go to church in the Brownsburg community. But the people in the community were very nice to us, and I went to the Green Hills Garden. I also came with a garden club of my own, and didn't belong to the local garden club. And so, but the people at the Green Hills would ask me to judge every now and then. And then I got to know the people in that group, the garden club, pretty well. And the Whipples were friends of ours from way back. And I really didn't know, we didn't know very many people, but the thing that we enjoyed about it, I enjoyed about it so much, was that it kind of put you with a different group of people to own and restore an old and nice house. People wanted to come see it, and people wanted to, you know, I wanted to be a part of the Historical Society, I had time, and the APVA, and with the help of the APVA, about five of us wrote the nominations for their houses for the Virginia Landmarks and the National Register, and it was listed on the Virginia Landmarks and National Register. Aggie helped me a whole lot with this, because she took zillions of pictures, which we had to submit for the nomination. And it was nominated for its architectural value. You can be nominated for your historical value or your a couple other things without on the landmarks, but this was the architectural value. And of course, we talked about in the landmarks situation, we talked about what was built in the 1790s and what was built in the 1820s and 30s, and how it was used and its the social structure of it's being used with slaves and how that showed in the architecture of the house. That obviously there are slave quarters outside of the house for some time, and then the kitchen was brought, and the kitchen was outside of the house, and then later the kitchen was brought into the house, but it had no entrance into the main part of the house, and therefore all slaves or servants had to go outside to get to the main part of the house, come across porches and things of that sort that were interesting. And then I had to list a whole bunch of things about how I'd gotten all this information, and I listed people like people who had told us things, because I had to do a bibliography. And it took me a year to do all this, I think, nearly. But people like Dick Anderson, I can think of his name. Dick Anderson worked with us with the legalese part, and we worked sort of as a group. These five people are working with these nominations over the county. I've forgotten where the others were, but one of them was the Katzmer's house, and one of them was in Natural Bridge, and I've forgotten where the others were. But it was a help to have people to talk with as you were doing it. But it was a lot of work, and I thought, I went to the APVA not long after that, and I said, you know, as much time and work I put into this situation, I know it cost me over $1,000. Maybe we should talk about hiring people to do these things rather than our doing them self. And somebody who knew about this said, well, the Frasers charge $5,000 to $6,000 for doing it. I said, oh, well, I don't think it cost me that much to do it. But we changed the yard some and did some people. My friend Sarah Lanford gave me four English boxwoods that she had already started. In fact, we had to heel them in at Timber Ridge for one whole winter before we moved them to, while the building was going on and everything, and we moved them to Brownsburg, to Mulberry Grove in, I guess, the spring of 84. And they've done so well. I have a drawing that Art Lipscomb did for me, for Aggie and me, some years ago, that shows the boxwoods being so small, now they're so big. But the house was opened in 92 for Garden Week, and I worked and worked and worked really to get everything very beautiful. And that day it rained 6-5 inches, and people came from everywhere all day long. But I always felt like it was a grand and glorious success, because there were some weed patches in the yard that I never could conquer, and so people really couldn't walk around the yard too well, and they could look out the back windows at a really pretty bed of pink tulips, and everything bloomed at the right minute. The old pears all bloomed, the old crab apples bloomed, the new crab apples bloomed, and everything, it couldn't have been really more perfect, but right in front of the flower beds was a horrible weed, and I really never did get it really hard, and I only saw one couple walk out there and really look at the flower beds hard. But the tulips I worked on having late daffodils and early tulips, and they all bloomed right, and the Virginia bluebells bloomed right, and the dogwood was blooming, I think, even then. Now, maybe the dogwood hadn't bloomed quite, but the forsythia was gone, but it couldn't have been better. And I was not sorry about that rain, except for the poor garden club ladies. But we did have to do the upstairs hall floor over again. We had polyurethane on top of the stain, and I had nasty little gravel on the wall we had on the driveway, and it tracked into the house a good deal, and it scratched that upstairs floor. And Mr. I think his name was Swink, wasn't it, who did the forward. Came and redid the polyurethane, but that's all I really had to have redone. But I borrowed things from Brayhead people from Bremen, Thelma. Some of the Brayhead things they lent me. What were they? Fenders and things of that sort, I think, that Brayhead they lent me for gardening. Then it was open again in 2001 for Christmas tour, for the Brownsburg Christmas tour. And that time we didn't open the upstairs, but the for Garden Week upstairs was open, as well as the downstairs. But that was fun. One of my garden club ladies came and helped me decorate, and she loved doing it, and she made the prettiest Christmas tree with everything I owned on it. And, you know, Eliphas was not living then, but he would have died. He said, "You're overdoing that Christmas tree all the time with Christmas trees." We had absolutely everything we owned on that Christmas tree. And it was very pretty. And it was open for 2 days, all day Saturday and most of the days, half a day Sunday. And it was pretty cold. Did you sit on the front porch?
Cold.
It was cold. It wasn't as cold as the year before, but when I had been at Dick Barnes and as a hostess in Brownsburg, that was the coldest day of my life, I think. Anyway, that was a pretty day. Those were pretty days when people came. And some of my friends from Roanoke came, and I had some sandwiches upstairs that we, you know, they could eat for lunch. And a few things of that sort. But I really enjoyed those years living at Mulberry Grove. Makes me cry.
Aww. Oh, well, you had just mentioned that doing the lottery was the most challenging.
Yeah, we're going to hear where we were in that?
Oh, no, I turned it over.
Oh, I see. I think that we had an open house the first Christmas we were there. And it was a Sunday afternoon. It was a beautiful day. And Mac had said, "I don't know whether anybody were really come or not, because they were having a Christmas program at New Providence." Well, I think all of New Providence came. And I've always wondered if they all didn't come to see what we had made into the library, because Mother never let anybody into that bedroom. I don't think anybody in the Brownsburg neighborhood had ever seen that room. But that room was the most challenging of all. We had to redo the hearth because it had sunk and the bricks were all different. And the fireplace in general. We put dampers in both of the chimneys, both living room and the dining room. But in order to do I think we redid the hearth in the living room too. We needed old brick, and we took them off the tops of the chimneys. And I've always been so disappointed in that work. The bricklayers did not look at the depth, the size of the mortar in the chimneys, and they made the mortar thicker where they added bricks. We bought bricks from Baldwin from Locker Brick Company, and it was made like old brick. It was to look like old brick to put back on the chimneys, but it was the bricklayer's fault that they didn't, and I didn't catch this until it was done, that the mortar is thicker on this new part that we added. The bricks look good. It looked pretty much like the old bricks.
But there's all this difference in the height of the mortar and between the on each of the chimneys, and I was oh so upset about this, and just hope nobody licks at those chimneys too hard. But anyway, that room, we lived in that room. We used it for our television room, and had put in nice bookcases, and we enjoyed that room at all. And it was warm. Our redoing of the, and buying a new furnace and a few things like that. Mother, everyone was always cold. Mother was trying to get warm when it was her bedroom. But part of it was the insulation, and part of it was the stopping up the chimneys, and you know, a few things, a whole lot of it was insulation, I'm sure. But we had no trouble heating that room. I was always scared to death it might be cold. She was always trying to heat that room. But lots of people came for that open house. And Alexander and Robert, my grandchildren, were, how old were they? They were probably in the, maybe the fourth and sixth grade or a little bit less. They went upstairs and got under the bed in the bed. They had two double beds. They were maybe three-quarter beds. Two bedroom beds in that in the guest room. They got under the beds and listened to what people said.
And they must through the been, register into the dining room.
What?
Through the register
no,
into
no,
the dining room.
No, people came upstairs. That whole house was open.
Oh.
The people who came in the rooms, they were under the beds all the time. And all the beds had.
Did they report everyone's comments?
They talked about one couple. I won't mention that all the time. A little bit, but you know, our friends came from everywhere. That was a pretty Sunday afternoon, and I think Clinton Irvin had given me, this was a contractor, some really pretty flower arrangements that were hither and yon, and I did pretty things on the mantles. And it was, you know, the house just looked lovely, and it was, we had, that first year we had a cedar Christmas tree, because I said, you know, this is, we're in a new, we're an old Virginia house, we better do a Virginia thing. And so we had a cedar tree from the farm, from Mulberry Grove Farm. And I had to make decoration. I never had a tree that big, and I never had another cedar tree after that, because they're just too hard to deal with. But we borrowed from Mac and Anna the dolls that were Mother's, and put them on the, Anna had them redressed and put them under the Christmas tree. We had hostesses around and about most of the rooms, I think. But not like the Garden Club hostesses, but we didn't know as much about the history, I guess, of the house then. But we knew a lot about what we had done to it with all those things, but that was a pretty Christmas party. Oh, and the I always said I think I had the best refreshments I've ever had at a party from then until now. Penelope Ferguson and Mary Kay, what's her name, at the Reese Farm.
Mary Kay
were doing catering at that time, and they had the best food, and it was just wonderful. They had a bean dip in the, it was hot, in the library. They had food in all the rooms, and food on the dining room table. They had a crab dip that was out of this world. I forgot what else. Oh, they had, I'd asked them for sweet potato biscuits with ham, and they did those, and they were so good. No wonder people came. But I forgot what we had, what kind of punch we had. We may have had, can't remember. I don't know whether it was a Christmas type punch or Jan Heffelfinger's good punch that is in your cookbook. Might have been that, but they may have done it. And I don't think it was hot, but I can't remember. But I always thought that was one of the best parties we ever had. But we had a lot of parties while we were there. Remember the time I made you cut. I feel guilty about this forever. Was it, why were we having Mayor, was it when John, Lee, no, it was a, not that party. We had a party when John and Leanne were mayor.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the time we had cheesecake. That was some smaller get-together. And I made you cut the chocolate cheesecake. It had the top, I was going to cut one and you were cutting the other. And the chocolate cheesecake, the chocolate was so hard, it was so impossible to cut it. I was so, felt so guilty about that forever and ever. And I've forgotten what kind of party that was.
Mm-hmm.
We had, Alec had cancer while we were there. In the fall of 89, I guess it was. It was in the fall of 88, I guess. In the winter of 88 and 89, he was, because Will was born in 89, no, that's not right, Will was born in 86. He must have been just before Elizabeth was born, because in the summer after his cancer, we had a big yard lawn party, and Julie was very pregnant with somebody, and I think it must have been Elizabeth, because Will was born just the day after Mac sold his cows from the dairy farm, because Elizabeth and Julie came over there. So I remember that was in 86. In the spring of 86, when is his birthday? April. Joe came to help him with whatever they had to tattoo the cows or ear tag them or do something and help him with the cows. And Liz and Julie went down there once, I remember, to watch, and I think Will was born the next day after that. Will was born on a Sunday, and I think that probably was the next day. And that was in 86, and we'd only been there a couple of years. He was really in the dairy business just about 2 years while we were there, and then he sold the cows and went out of the business. But back to Alec and the cancer. He had cancer in the winter of 88, I suppose. He took chemo and lost his hair, and local Dr. Cruz, his internist, said, "You'll come near dying pneumonia with this cancer. Stay at home and don't go out and shake hands with people. And where you'll catch a cough, we'll catch something." So we pretty much did that in the winter of 88 and 89. But we had a supper group that we entertained. We had done this before we left Timber Ridge, with a family named Whipple, a man and a wife, Fred and Marcy, a couple named Fox, who's a doctor, local doctor in Fairfield, Trudy and Dr. Fox, and Libby and Tate Alexander, and Alec and I were in this group, because all the guys had February birthdays, and we've rotated each year to have the birthday party. And my year came the year that Alec had cancer, and I was really glad people came to see us, but they were careful not to have a cold or anything when they did come to see us. But Jane Mackey had knitted Alec this cutest toboggan, little toboggan, because he had no hair. And if you walk from old houses from one to the other, you have a breeze. And so he wore that toboggan all winter long, and we have pictures of him. She gave it to him back Christmas time, I think. And it had a red tassel and a green tassel. And he wore it in the Christmas season. Jane, it had a white tassel also. And there are pictures of him at the dinner party. We always did an elegant dinner party. Got out our best tablecloths and great grandmother's huge napkins and to iron all those things and all that stuff. And one year I had leg of lamb, and one year I had, that must have been the leg of lamb year. I know one year Fred didn't come, and that was the year that he was catching a cold or something, but that may have been the year, because he didn't want to give Alec something. I'd have forgotten. And that's the year I had Leg of Lamb, and they were, it was really so good. And I was so sad because they raised sheep, and they always, anyway, we had always had a good time listening to Dr. Fox and his funny stories about birthing children underwater that people wanted to do or something. It was a fun time, and we got along, and Eric, you know, got along fine with the chemo, and we finished the chemo in March, began it on Halloween Day, and went to Roanoke for the chemo, and finished sometime in March. They extended it a little. It was very, very hard. The first of it was very, very hard for him and made him really sick and terrible. So they lessened the dosage and extended the time. And so instead of maybe the 6 months or something, I think it went on 8 months or so, but it was a good long while, but he never was as sick as he had been those first dosages. But so after he, about April or May, he was declared definitely in remission, and the next year he was, you know, after 5 years they declared it was a cure, and he lived that long and longer. But anyway, we decided we need to have a party to have for all the people who'd been so nice to us all winter. And so in the meantime, I had been to, while he was going to chemo, I went to a weight thing in Roanoke and lost a lot of weight. And so we had a coming out party, and we had big tents in the yard, and Aggie took some wonderful pictures that are just fantastic of the house and the yard and all these sorts of things. And we had lots and lots of people.
And a perfect day.
And it was a perfect day, just a beautiful day with pretty tent, and friends from all over. And it was Dr. McClung came out in the morning and brought roses, and then I put them in the house, and he called me someday after that and asked me where the roses were. Did I ever tell you that? I was so horrified. A lot of people went in the house. I think most everybody went in the house, really, and saw the roses. I said, oh, Dr. McClung, I thought they were too elegant for our doors. I was so horrified. Yes, we made the roof. The worst boo-boo. And the yard was pretty, and everything, you know. So, you know, we really had a good time where we could entertain. It always bothered me so much that at Timber Ridge, everybody came in the back door. And that, I was so happy to move to Brownsburg and get a front door once more.
I like that too.
Yeah. And I didn't have to feel like Mildred Thompson, who lived at Church Hill, who kept saying, you have to keep the kitchen looking like a reception room all the time. Because everybody comes in the back door. And so I never was a very wonderful kitchen person, so I was delighted to have a front door. And we always enjoyed that wonderful front porch. And Alec died in 96. My friend Jeanette Mackey appeared the day he died, I suppose, or he died on Saturday night and Sunday. I think it was the Sunday afternoon, the next morning. I'm here, and I'm going to do all these things. And with that, she kind of took over, and she came the next day and said, I'm going to take this food home and this food home and do this and so with it. And the day after, I have ordered some tables from the Rental place in Lexington with cloths and chairs too, I guess, and everything to sit in the yard for lunch after the funeral. Funeral was at 11 o'clock at Timber Ridge. And we came back, and people had sent azaleas in pots, and she had changed the kitchen furniture all around, and had everything all fixed, and these beautiful tables on a pretty sunny day in the yard with the white cloths, and she had set the azaleas on one on each of the tables. And so people could eat. The only mistake we made, or what if it wasn't, couldn't be helped, was it was so sunshiny in the front yard that if you sat out there, you couldn't talk to anybody, you couldn't see anybody next to you because the sun was the wrong place at that hour we had lunch. But she made an elegant lunch out of stuff that people had brought. You know, it was just so nice that, you know, here's this gal that can do these kinds of things and make it look elegant and stuff. You know, I didn't lift a finger. all I had to do was talk to the people. But people had brought all sorts of really lovely things. Mary Gillum, Mary Stuart Gillum, brought some wonderful little cupcakes, white or yellow cupcakes with caramel icing. And I took them upstairs and put them in my closet because I loved them. So sometime during the morning, Jeanette said, "Where are those cupcakes?" And I said, "You can't have those cupcakes." They were not big cupcakes. They were little cupcakes. Mary Stuart had, the day that the garden, Hayes was open for garden tour, Mary Stuart had brought a huge, big, flat basket like this with food. It was the day before when everybody was there making such a mess and fixing flowers and all that stuff for people to eat, for people for their lunch. And then Adelaide brought I had for that garden tour that day, we had food on the back lower back porch. I locked the old kitchen and we had food on the lower back porch for any of the hostesses who wanted to eat. And Adelaide had brought all these wonderful chicken salad sandwiches. And I don't think I did much of that. People had said, "I'm going to do so-and-so, and I'm going to do so-and-so." And Mary Stuart had brought a lot of the Garden Club ladies, the Blue Ridge Garden Club ladies, had brought food, too, for that. For and in this pouring down rain, people sit right there on the back porch, but looking at the pretty tulips and all that stuff. So all those interesting things went on while we were living at Brownsburg.
I'm going to have to rush out.
Yeah, it's time to go, isn't it? Yes.
Thank you so much.
Well, you've got to go get your dog.
Got to go get the doggy.
Mm-hmm.